surviving a 39-mile walk and living to tell about it. And how do we do that? Well, we connect it with God, with faith and religion. How else? This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting those dots and so much more. This is episode number 484 of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, we are back and standing and walking, and we are still here. Yes, I tried to think of how I'm going to get into today's show, and that's really the bottom line. We are standing. After the Avon 39 walk, we are still here. And Team Inner Shoes crossed that finish line together in a show of victory, the Avon 39-mile walk to end breast cancer. Quite an achievement, and we're feeling really good. And I'm glad to be here with you today. I'm going to be sharing some thoughts, some ideas about that walk. But first, let me tell you, physically, we're okay. Yeah, you know, a little bit sore. I think for me, you know, it's a two-day event. I've shared this with you, but really quickly, the mechanics of it. We got there to Santa Barbara, beautiful Santa Barbara, knowing that we're going to be walking a marathon and a half. That is 39.2 or 39.3. Yeah, 39.3 miles, I think that's what it was, or something close to that, okay? 39 plus a few, some plus some change, as they say, right? So we knew we were going to be walking that, so you prepare for it. But what was really difficult for us preparing for it was the last 2 weeks. Here in the Southern California area, we had some hot, humid days, which made it impossible to prepare properly, decently. So we never really got a good, solid walk in there. We did a few walks of 9-mile duration. But we went to Santa Barbara. Thank God we made it through. There was a good team of us, okay? There was hundreds of people. But our particular team was called Team In Her Shoes, kind of a side branch of In His Shoes. This is Team In Her Shoes. And obviously, because breast cancer hits women more than it does men. And we adopted that name several years ago. So there was about 8 of us walking. And there was about 12 of us that were, maybe not that many, 10 people that were crewing. Crewing are the people that set up everything, that fed us, that took care of the meals. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this. And that's what I'm going to be sharing with you in a few minutes. Actually, today is going to be a really kind of an eye-opener. If you are involved in anything churchy, if you are involved in anything that has to do with that fine balance of helping people, of reaching out, of outreach to people, and the balance of raising money and making sure that that money gets to its places, you're going to find today's podcast very interesting. So bear with some of this mechanical stuff that I want to get through right at the beginning. So it's a two-day process. We get there on Saturday. We walk Saturday for 26 miles. At night, we sleep in tents. And like, thank God that there was this crew, incredible crew this year, and they set up our tents. So we didn't have to, after all that walking, we didn't have to go there and mess with unfolding tents and setting up sleeping bags, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it was just great. So you go to sleep, and no mattresses, nothing. You're in a tent. You would think that it's hard. No. The floor may be hard, but it is not hard to go to sleep immediately. I think I was down before 9 o'clock that night. You go in the tent and you're out. So anyway, we were there with our team. We went to sleep, and then Sunday morning you get up and this time you have sore feet, okay? So now you're on your second day, you're going to be ready to walk. But Avon is just so good. Meticulously, they take charge and control of the entire atmosphere and the entire event so that they account for problem feet. They account for problems that you may have. For instance, at night, you know, when you get to the camp, to the base camp, they are set up with nurses who are there was a big line, me too, me included too, who split blisters off of your feet, and they treated those. There was a chiropractor on site over there. There was massages on site, masseuses that would give you massages. Okay, yeah, think about it. 26 miles you walk. Hey, this isn't a death march. No, this is something you have volunteered to do, and they want to make sure that you come back and you're healthy and you're feeling good about doing it. And it's in this atmosphere that we went through the 39-mile walk. And it's about this atmosphere that was being created that I want to share with you, because I think that there is so much that we can learn with it. And I want to share with you some of the thoughts, the insights that we have. But let me start off right now. I want to play you a speech that was given. It's almost like a cheerleading speech at the beginning of the walk. We got together a Saturday morning, and at 6:30, there's a good half hour of, first of all, some stretching, some exercises, and then they tell you what this is all about. They announce how much money has been collected. This year, $4.1 million was collected from our group. Team InnerShoes was able to contribute $15,000 towards that $4.1 million. But here's what I want to share with you. There was a lot more than 4.1 million, and that's the hidden value of these. And I want you to think about that for a moment, because I know our listeners come from different backgrounds, come and are looking for spirituality. And one of the hindrances to finding spirituality in the churches is this fundraising idea, okay? I have heard it, you have heard it, that people just complain, like, why are we raising funds constantly? And I think that there is so much to learn from organizations like that. That's what I want to share with you. Let me start off with this little clip. This took place at the beginning. It's a Saturday morning. We're rallying, getting everybody ready to make the walk. These are all volunteers. And mind you, not volunteers who just say, we're going to walk. Every single person who walked had to qualify to walk. How? Can they walk? No, that wasn't important. Actually, I'm going to share with you a story of somebody who couldn't walk and walked. Okay? No, it's not about walking. You need to show that you're worthy to walk. And so they charge you a registration fee. You can't walk unless you pay the registration fee, $50. Okay, you say, well, that's okay. No, it goes beyond that, too. You have to collect $1,800 at least, at the very least. There were people who collected a few thousand dollars. $1,800 apiece you had to collect in order to have the privilege to walk. Think about that for a moment, okay? Think about that. It's a privilege to walk, and you pay for it. It's a privilege to go through this pain and suffering. Yeah? Exactly. Listen to this.
We knew that together, we could make a difference. She walked Avon 39 to help find a cure for her girls, friends, and anyone that might get the news that they have breast cancer. And her team, Team Fireball, is walking in her honor this weekend. And I walk for heroes like Coach Coco and all of you, people with unflappable spirit, heart, and perseverance. And so many stories have brought us to Santa Barbara this weekend, stories of challenge, of heartbreak, of determination, of survival. And while each story is uniquely personal, we're all connected by common threads of how breast cancer has touched our lives. So as you walk this weekend, share your 39 with new friends and see what you have in common. We wear these connection bands as a symbol that bonds us together, so make sure that you get yours this weekend.
We talk about connections. In fact, it is the invitation, if you noticed. Those connections are the invitation to come and be a part of this. I want you to keep these thoughts in mind, okay? Because in a few minutes, when we get to our second portion of today's show, you're going to see how spiritually it works in connecting all of us in a bigger picture. I want to share with you about the godliness of this, of where is God in the midst of this? How do we translate? How do we understand? What is God in the new age? What does God mean for different people? This is all going to connect together. So understand that here was her invitation. How do we connect? We connect because we have suffered. We have gone through a suffering. You know, I've shared with you many times here on The Next Step that one of the problems with Christianity is we center on resurrection rather than on crucifixion. I mean, it's a problem in a good sense, right? I mean, we want to know that there is a resurrection, there is a hope, there is some positive. But in so doing, we fail to understand that we miss an opportunity for relevancy in this way. No one can relate to resurrection. It is a phenomena that no one has seen. But you talk about crucifixion, and everybody can relate. You talk about betrayal. You talk about being left out on your own, to be put up on a cross, to be displayed, to be mocked, and to be humiliated, and to finally live and die. That experience, everybody, if not everybody, most people can understand, right? And this was her invitation. She said, "We're all connected." Because whether you've had cancer, you have a loved one has had cancer, you've sat with somebody in a hospital room who's had cancer, you've heard about a family member that's gone through this, whatever it may be, we can relate to this. If you remember last week, as a prelude to this, I shared with you the story of the Good Samaritan. What was the point at which the Good Samaritan stepped into the picture? When the man was left for half dead. Remember that? And I shared with you that this was not a story about a man walking from Jericho to Jerusalem, Jerusalem to Jericho, walking from San Francisco to Los Angeles, driving a car, riding a train. It had nothing to do about that path, about a geographical connection of two different spaces. No, it had to do about the journey of life. And through the journey of life, we are left for half dead on many occasions. And certainly when cancer hits, yeah, that's it. Cancer is that robber that comes and tries to rob you. Like the man on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. Cancer comes and tries to rob you and leaves you for half dead. And then who's going to go there and walk with that person? Who's going to be standing with that person? It's the Good Samaritan, right? It's the person who says that I will leave the comforts behind and I will step in. And I will walk. I will go and help you. And so this call at the beginning of this march, at the beginning of this walk, was exactly in line with what we've been teaching. In other words, let us understand that we are all part of the same fabric of the same sufferings and dealings. I've shared with you that expression that we have, even Stephen, in Spanish, igual Pascual. And I went ahead and I shared it with you in Armenian, Havasar Bagdasar, right? It's the call that we're all even. Stop believing that there are differences between people. People are people and they hurt. And when it comes to cancer, it's the great equalizer. Because if you don't have cancer, someone you know has cancer. Someone you love has cancer. Someone you have shared with has cancer. And cancer's a scary one. And that's what we kept hearing about over and over through the weekend. One of the most touching stories for me was a gentleman named David. Yeah, he was there. He was a firefighter from Chicago, part of the Chicago Fire Department. I saw him on the first day. He was pushing a lady in a wheelchair. It turned out it was his mother. He was pushing her. But he wasn't just, you know, in a track outfit. Now, you got to remember, we're walking through Santa Barbara. The temperature was about 70, 80 degrees Fahrenheit, okay? That's pretty warm, okay? 80 degrees, yeah, that's warm. He was dressed up in firefighting gear. Heavy, hot. And he pushed his mother 39 miles. And throughout the entire weekend, we caught up, I think, twice. I mean, we'd see him throughout the weekend, but twice we were at the same watering hole. About every 2-3 miles, Avon is very good about making sure you stay hydrated. They have these watering holes where you stop and they give you water. And sometimes, if you're lucky, you get some graham crackers and candy and all kinds of like sugar fixes, peanuts and protein fixes, whatever it is along the way. So, at a couple of watering holes, I remember the women, you just see them with their little cell phones taking pictures of this guy. And then I heard a couple of them talking, "We need to nominate this man for The Bachelor." Yeah. I've never seen The Bachelor program, but from what my mom tells me, she is a big ardent fan of The Bachelor. I know that it could get really racy and steamy. These women were looking at him in a very racy and steamy manner. They were ready to nominate him, and certainly he deserved it. I mean, can you imagine walking 39 miles, pushing another human being in a wheelchair, and he did it. And not only were pushing, but wearing, being burdened by all the gear and all the clothing that go with the fire department gear. Yeah, and he did it. And you know what? If I told you that he was unique, it would be lying, because everybody had some kind of story. The fact that our group was walking in memory of our dear friend Laura, I shared with you when she passed a few months ago. And our team came up with a very, very nice motto: live, laugh, love like Laura. That's five L's. My sister Anush came up with this nice little slogan and designed it into a hoodie, and we were wearing it, and it brought us together. And even the people that didn't know Laura on the team, they connected because we knew her. And it gave an opportunity for others to look at her life and then to start talking about their experiences, whether it was the loss of a mother that prompted them to come on this walk, whether it was because they themselves had gone through cancer, whether it was a sister, an aunt. We had one lady on our team whose husband had breast cancer. Yeah, it's rare, but it does happen. It is rare, but it does happen. And she was so thankful that it's now, I think, her third or fourth year that she participates in this walk on Team In Her Shoes to make sure that others have an opportunity. The opportunity that was granted her husband, she wants to make sure that others have that opportunity to good health. So this is the spirit in which we were gathered there, in which we walked. And the second portion of today's show, I want to share with you some of the spiritual angles to this, and to tie it up with an understanding of how it works to help others, how it works to raise those kind of funds. And I think you're going to find some unique points in that. So bear with me. Right now I'm going to do the song of the day. Reincarnation. They are playing in Griffith Park, of all places, one of my favorite hangouts. They are playing there this weekend. And they're known as an Armenian, I guess crudely said, they're Armenian reggae band. Is that possible? Anyway, you decide, okay? Here is Reincarnation. We'll be right back.
Հայ ֆանատը ներկայացնում է.
Սիրում եմ քեզ իմ աղջիկ, մի հատի ես մի հատի, սրտիս միջին տեղ ունես, հոգուս սրտիս տեղն ես, ամեն օր ինձ տանջում ես, հոգուս է դու խաղում ես, արի տեսնեմ տեղով ես, հոգուս սրտիս տեղն ես, յարարի յարի, յարարի յարի, յարարի յարի, սերս
Reincarnation, name of the band. They're going to be playing in Griffith Park here in Los Angeles this weekend. And yes, I caught Susie off guard. She just now told me that she's going to be attending that concert. So you make sure that if you're at that concert, you look up Susie, okay? She'll be over there. You know, it's kind of late right now. You probably could tell it from my voice. I am run down from the walk. We also did our monthly feed over at Ascensia. And we had a nice group of people over there. We did it in memory of Puzant Sabunjan. And this is a tradition that we started a few years ago, but it's going to get formalized now. We're going to be doing these in terms of doing Madal, which I've shared with you through the podcast. But I'll be happy to share it with you in the coming podcast, because it's really an exciting new program that we're trying to launch, formalizing, and it goes really along with what we're talking about today in this Avon briefing, so to speak, after the event. Anyway, the song of the day, that was Reincarnation, and the name of that piece is Yar Ari, and there will be a link on today's show notes. Do check them out. And like I said, they are known as an Armenian reggae band. You tell me, did you feel that? Did you feel a little bit of reggae in there? I don't know. Back in a moment.
As I did walk by Hampstead Fair, I came upon Mother.
Well, we are talking about the Avon Walk post-event notes, so to speak. And this was called The Power of 39. This is a 39-mile walk. And they started talking about this right off the bat. They talked about the power of 39. This is what the second portion of today's. First portion of today's show, we talked about some of the mechanics, what we did. This is where we get into some of the meat of it, okay? They talked about the power of 39. And on that first morning and in all the brochures and all the promotion stuff, we heard about the power of 39. In fact, at first the hashtag was Avon39. By the time we got to the event, the hashtag had turned into the power of 39. And I listened to speaker after speaker as they spoke, and they talked about the power of 39. The power of 39 being in you. They talked about the power of 39 was with you. They talked about the power of 39 is always with you. In fact, they even said that the power of 39 is in all of us. Now, these are people basically, like I said at the beginning of the walk, cheerleaders. Throughout the walk at different stations, they'd be yelling at us like, keep going, yeah, the power of 39, everything's okay. But the big ones were at the rallies where you had hundreds of people and they talked about the power of 39. And it occurred to me, the power of 39 was being, that phrase was a euphemism for God. Yeah. The power of 39 is in you. What do Christians say? God is in you, right? The power of 39 is with you. What do we say? God is with you. You remember, what was it, about 40 years ago? Star Wars came out. The Force be with you. We didn't want to use the word God. The Force be with you. The Force is with you. Remember that? Ken's looking at me. What do you mean, remember? Yeah, I know. He's still in that time warp. Yes, I know. He still refers to the Force. Why not? Why not? And that's really the point that we're discussing right now. Why not? The power of 39. Well, in preparing for today's show, I thought about, was the power of 39 a metaphor, maybe? No, it wasn't. Actually, I looked up euphemism. Listen to what euphemism is. A euphemism is a mild or indirect word or expression substituted for one considered to be too harsh or blunt when referring to something unpleasant or embarrassing. Let me read that again, okay? A euphemism is a mild or indirect word or expression substituted for one considered to be too harsh or blunt when referring to something unpleasant or embarrassing. And isn't that what we're talking about when we talk about religion? I mean, people are just so embarrassed. People are just scared to talk about religion. Two things that we never talk about, politics and religion. Well, guess what? There's not too many other things that people could talk about. You know, that to me is like one of the big positive points to sports. You ever thought about that? Thank God that they're sports, because otherwise you'd have to talk about things that mattered in your life. Right? Sports keeps us from gossiping. We don't have to talk about what our neighbor's doing. We don't have to talk about what our friends are doing. We don't have to confront issues that are real because we have sports. And we can confront these issues in the same way. How did the golfer golf? How did the football player score? How did the basketball player end the game? What are some of the side effects of the drugs that these stars are taking? Well, it gives us an opportunity to talk about things rather than ourselves, rather than our situation, okay? It's embarrassing to talk about God. It's embarrassing to say, I believe in God. And so, very comfortably, this lady got up and she spoke. And next, another lady got up and spoke. And then another one got up and spoke at the Avon Walk. Without saying God, they said, the power of 39 is with you. The power of 39 guides you. The power of 39 is with all of us. The power of 39 is what it's about. Wow. Now, we wouldn't dare to get up in front of a crowd, a mixed crowd, and say, God is with you. God is inside all of us. God guides us. No, you can't say that. Why? Well, because now you've elevated into the field of religion. We don't talk about religion in mixed groups, right? We don't talk about it. But it's okay to talk about powers, about forces. Now, before you think that I'm complaining about this, I don't think it's too bad. Now, look, there's a problem. The minute you start talking about Jesus, his beautiful teachings, which are incomparable with anybody else's, true solid love, because not only did he teach it, but he lived it, he experienced it, and he shared it. But why is he left out from all of the, you know, they'll talk about the philosophies of great people. You know, they'll never talk about Jesus. You will hear people like, you might get one of his ministers, you might get Martin Luther King Jr. quoted, but you never get people to quote the actual source of Jesus Christ. It's interesting, right? They will quote Nelson Mandela. They will quote the Dalai Lama, right? They won't quote Jesus. They won't say this is something that Jesus said. Here, look, I noticed this the other day in a book. Highly recommend this book, by the way. It's by Jacqueline Leo. It's called Seven. If I remember, I will put a link on today's show notes. I think we talked about it a few weeks ago. Anyway, listen to this part. It talks about the philosophers. And she references a book. She says, in his book, The Happiness Hypothesis, Finding Modern Truth in Ancient Wisdom, Jonathan Haidt takes 10 great ideas from different civilizations and explores how those ideas, have been adapted to a modern world. Living a life of virtue, meaning, happiness, and love is described by the masters of moral thought. Who are those moral thought masters? Aristotle, Socrates, Buddha, and Confucius. To name a few, Greek philosophers defined happiness in ways that still resonate today, and so on and so on. Did you catch that? That list, Aristotle, Socrates, Buddha, and Confucius, to name a few. Jesus never makes that list, you know? The reason is because people have elevated Jesus to the status of God. And once you do that, you're in for a fight, because not everyone's going to accept that. See, everybody will accept the parts about love, about compassion, about treating neighbor as yourself. But once you elevate Jesus to the status of love, people are going to back off. And Christians will go through quite extensive means, will go through a lot of hassle, trouble, to shove it down other people's throat that Jesus has to be recognized as God, that he's unique and singular, rather than talk about the message that he has, and how unique and singular it is, and how it can be applied for the world today. And this tragically is the reason why Jesus gets left out. Because let me be honest with you, okay? You know, people always come up to you and they say, why don't you go out there and we should be praying in school? I'm not really a fan of prayers in school, in public schools. People say, what? You're a priest. Why are you against prayer in public schools? Well, because in our society, right, you can't have one religion endorsed by the government and not another religion. So guess what? If they're going to allow prayer in school, they're going to allow prayer along all lines. Somebody has to hear my prayer, I have to hear their prayer. Tell you the truth, I'm not really interested in listening to other people's prayers. Oh, Does that bother you? I really know what I believe. I believe in the goodness of God. Sometimes I listen to other people's prayers, and they point to a God that I just can't buy. I think I shared this with you last year at an event, a genocide commemoration. I went in Glendale. I won't go to the next one. I mean, there were people from different traditions that, I'm sorry, I do not want to be a part of them. I don't want to be a part of a praying community in a group like that. And so they've offended me. Now, why would I allow them to lead prayers in an environment that I can control? And so I really seriously feel that public schools are places, and I hope you do too, where learning should be the most important thing. Learning the basics of reading, writing, arithmetic. And all of the other stuff is left for the home, and it should be in the home. And this is what's happened right now. Jesus comes and gives us this incredible system of living. A system of truly enhanced life. And instead of us sharing that with the world, we share that, okay, because Jesus did these certain acts, he must be above the cut, and therefore he is worthy of worship, and therefore because he is worthy of worship, you have to worship, and if you don't, then you're on a lower rung. And listen, folks, to be honest with you, that could work for you. It works for me, but it doesn't work for everybody. That's the truth of it. And I think that if Jesus were asked today, 2,000 years after your experience on earth, would you rather people remember you or your message? I would be pretty sure that he would say, I want them to remember my message. The message of love, the message of hope, the message of helping, of outreach, of securing one another. And so we come back to what happened at Avon. They referred to the power of 39 as a euphemism for God. Now, I could get all bent out of shape and say, how dare they not talk about God? Or I can understand that in our language today, this is an acceptable way of talking about God, the power of 39. Just as 40 years ago, we all understood that in Star Wars, when Luke Skywalker was told by Obi-Wan Kenobi that the Force is something that you have to accept is inside of you, and he said, the Force be with you. We all understood that God is with you. And it's just language. Language with an expression that moves us. And if it moves us in the paths of peace, in the paths of love, then you need to be able to be open to it. Perhaps not for your life completely, but open to the possibility that it is talking and it is a means by which we are talking to other people. Now, spiritually, I was fine. I think everybody was spiritually fine. I've just shared with you that this was what I noticed. Now, I want to talk to you about what I noticed about organizationally, and this is important. So many times in church life, we get this difficult balance between fundraising and actually doing stuff. I have sat at countless meetings, and I will tell you that it is one of the most remarkable phenomena, at least within the Armenian church. I want to believe it's within a lot of the churches. I will sit at a meeting, and no one has ever directed any of the participants at the meeting to raise money. And yet, the first order of business will be, let's raise money. And you ask them, for what? They don't know. We have to raise money. It's difficult. A couple of years ago, we were on this pilgrimage, and we went to one of the most affluent churches. If not in the Western Diocese, I would say easily in the world. Affluent in the tunes of several millions of dollars in reserves. And we sat with the pastor there. And one of our members, we were in a pilgrimage. We had gone up there and we sat with the pastor. And the pastor was bragging that, you know, they have more money coming in than they spend. This is a point of bragging, I guess, within the Christian church. And one of our members said, you mean you don't know what to do with the money? I mean, you don't have poor, you don't have homeless people over here? And so where's that balance where you bring in and you spend? I remember there was a church in Walnut Creek when I was first called to the ministry 35 years ago. This is a story I'll never forget. We had just started our church in Cupertino, which eventually became the St. Andrew Church, on just basically shoestring budget. And I'll tell you, we never needed money. We were able to always meet our budgets. We were always able to not only pay for the construction of the new building, but during the construction, an earthquake happened in Armenia. We were able to halt construction, raise funds, and send to Armenia. The following year, an earthquake happened in the San Francisco Bay Area. We were able to halt construction, raise funds for that event, and then continue and build this building, this magnificent church. By the way, today in today's show notes, there'll be a little blurb about my 35th anniversary. Check that out, because there's a neat picture in there of the church I'm talking about in Cupertino. It's called the St. Andrew Armenian Church. So here we were at this church in Cupertino, and again, you know, how are we going to raise money? And the example that I brought was a church in Walnut Creek. I'll never forget this. They had a $2 million budget. $2 million. It was exactly 10 times what the budget was for our church. And our church was with all the salaries, with all the utilities, with all the rents that we were paying, and the construction was just beginning. So we were starting to pay designers, architects, and so forth. They had a $2 million budget, this church in Walnut Creek. And I'll never forget, they ended the year with $2,000 in their account. And this was not unique. Every year, the same story. And when I talked to the pastor, he says, we're not meant to have reserves. We raise the money and we spend it. That's what the money is for. And how true. It was God sent that I met this man early in my ministry, because it set the tone for what I did in my ministry throughout all the churches. Like, the money's there to be spent, not kept. I don't believe in those kind of savings accounts. You can do that for yourself. But if a church has to rely on savings accounts, right? If it has to go into its savings to ensure that it will stay open, well, then maybe it's time that that church closed down, right? Doesn't that make sense? If people aren't contributing, they're not giving, and you can't support yourself, time to close it. Time to say, sorry, can't do it anymore. Or else figure out what you're doing wrong and make it live because you are providing the service that people want. But don't live because you're relying on your savings. And so when I saw this model at Avon, I was very intrigued, because first of all, as I shared with you a few minutes ago, every person who had to walk had to pay a registration fee. Every person who walked had to collect at a minimum $1,800. $1,800, okay? That's not small potatoes. That's difficult. In fact, one of our team members fell short. And we were able to advance it through In His Shoes. I mean, it happens. You just can't do it. That's a lot of money. But it shows that people who are walking are committed to the project, because where your treasure is, your heart will be also. So if your treasure is there, you know your heart's going to be there. And this is one of the points that we forget when we don't demand from people. To serve God, to serve people, is a privilege. And so it was in this atmosphere that we got together. People were there because they wanted to be there, understood it was a privilege, and they paid not only with their money, but with the collections that they made. They paid for that privilege to be able to walk this 39-mile walk. Now, that was one point. The other point about how to do it is sometimes one of those delicate balances, again, another delicate balance, between what you bring in and what you spend. And obviously, when we sat and we listened to the amount collected, $4.1 million, and you heard the amounts that were given, they accounted for, you know, a portion of that. And you say, well, where's the other portion? What happened to the rest of the money? Well, here's a real big reality in life, okay? People don't contribute to outhouses, to toilets. Yeah. You will not be able to go into a building that's marked up and shows that this is the such-and-such room, this is the so-and-so hall. You won't go into their bathroom and see a plaque that says, this bathroom is dedicated in the name of so-and-so. People don't give money to bathrooms. They don't give money for toilet paper. They don't give money for even less obnoxious things, okay? They don't give money for the air conditioning bill. That has to come from someplace, right? I learned this when we were, again, back in St. Andrew days, back in San Jose. We were building a building. And basic things that you need in a building are walls, are roofs. Nobody gives money to build the roof. But they will give money to build a room that is dedicated in their name, in their mother's name, father's name, for some reason, okay? So somehow you have to figure out how to get that money. For instance, the altar, it's a table. There's a price on that altar of $100,000. Well, you know you can manufacture that altar table for $10,000. Well, guess what? The other $90,000 has to go to put up the walls, to put up the doorknobs, the hinges on the doors. That has to take care of, well, I'm sorry to say, the bathrooms too. Somehow you have to raise the money for the rest of the things. And so too at Avon. You realize that all of this stuff that's going on around you, that all of the care, the tents, the areas that you're walking through, the incredible human power that is there costs money. The generators, middle of the night you're waking up and you're seeing lights on, in this beautiful open air field where we were staying. Well, those lights were generated by generators that need fuel, that are machinery that are going on. Okay. How do you pay for that? Well, that's going to come out of this money that we're collecting. Now, the big question is, is it justified? That's the real big question, right? I think it's Doctors Without Borders. There's a watchdog group that has some kind of information about this. Percentages. They go through many of the nonprofits. And I think, for instance, Red Cross is not one of the higher ones on that list. For every dollar you give, I think something like 20, 30 cents, perhaps even 40 cents goes to administrative costs. I think it's Doctors Without Borders, if I remember right, and we could check this out. And I'll make a note. If we can, maybe we'll put a list on the show notes. Doctors Without Borders has the best ratio. So I think on every dollar, 97 cents or 96 cents goes to aiding the people that you're sending it for. I'm sure you've had this experience, right? You contribute to something, to a noble cause, right? You contribute to a cancer cure, to the Red Cross, okay? There's a huge hurricane, right? Huge hurricane that just happened. Harvey and then Irma. And so you make a contribution. And guess what? You become now a statistic. So all of a sudden, you've donated $100, $200, whatever it is. They've got you tagged. And every 2 weeks you receive letters from them. And you know that that letter costs money in printing and in mailing. And yet they send it. So if you put it all together, maybe in a couple of years, that $100 is already spent by just these mailings that they've sent to you. And you say, wait, what's going on? Or I guess use a smaller amount. Say you've donated $25. Well, within a couple mailings, you know that that money's been lost over there. But here's what I want to share with you. There is a hidden advantage to all of this. And that advantage is the advertising, the PR value of it, in the sense of community, in the sense of bringing people together. That is what justifies the spending. Now, what's that ratio? Is it okay to spend 99 cents to make 1 cent? Like, in other words, can you take a dollar and say, I'm going to spend 99 cents of this on marketing, and if it earns me 1 cent, we're 1 cent ahead of where we were, because that 1 cent will translate into a dollar, will translate into $100. So is it okay for me to spend $99 to make $100? I don't know. That's really a call that people have to make. To me, no, I can't justify it. I remember I had a wonderful group of ladies who were contemplating helping a certain cause. And they had this fundraiser. They had a dinner, got together for dinner, and spent money in for this elegant dinner at a nice restaurant. And at the end, they donated $1,000. And this wasn't a popular thing that I said, but I had to share it with a few people. I had counted around the room. There was exactly 40 people in that room. 40 women were in that room. And they went through quite a bit of trouble advertising this event, selling tickets for this event. And the ticket price was something like $75 a person. And they were able to get in a certain amount of people and put together this little, small little donation of $1,000. And I said, you know, there's 40 of you in this room. If each of you wrote out a check for $25, we'd have the $1,000. And you don't have to deal with selling tickets. You don't have to deal with pleading with people. You don't even have to deal with coming to the thing. And one of the women said, well, maybe it's because we like doing this. We like getting together. Ah, now there is the hidden advantage to all of this. And so, too, at the Avon walk, you realize that the hidden advantage, the hidden reason why you do all this, is because it gives you a sense of belonging. It gives you a sense of purpose. It lets you understand the half-dead person, and you become the Samaritan at this moment. In a word, we can call it the advertising, the marketing fee. You know, Henry Ford once said, a man who stops advertising to save money is like a man who stops a clock to save time. Think about that, right? A man who stops advertising to save money is like a man who stops a clock to save time. In other words, you got to share the goodness that is happening all around you, because that expression becomes the cheerleader for the rest of the group. And that's the way you move forward. So that, okay, you spend, let's say 99 out of the 100 is a little bit too much, but let's use something like 40 cents. Okay, 40 cents on a dollar. Doctors with Borders spent 3 cents, 4 cents on the dollar for administration. Let's use an example of 40 cents. Okay, 40 cents on the dollars used for administration, because we're going to have these people walking, and we're going to be putting them up in tents. We're going to have outhouses. Well, listen, do the computation really quickly. For all those campers for all those walkers that camped out that night, if you had put them all together, the hundreds of people, you probably could have gotten a very cheap motel in town and saved money, because if you just paid for the cheap hotel, put two people in there, they would have had showers, they would have bathrooms. You didn't need to bring in the outhouses, the portable showers. You didn't need to bring the generators. You didn't need to deal with tents. It would have probably been cheaper. But what fun would it have that been? You end up at a hotel. Think about the fun experience that with all that pain and suffering of walking that first day. You get to drop your head down, and you now on the earth and fall asleep, and now you have a story to tell. And that story is the one that's going to inspire other people. Hey, listen, you know, one of the heroes of this walk is my sister Anna. You've met her on the show. We've talked about her a lot of times. And you listen to you listen to what she did 12, 13, 14 years ago when she did her first walk. Nobody knew about it. We had just moved to L.A., and we went out one night that she was walking. At that time, it was a 60-mile walk over 3 days. And we went out, and we saw my sister out there at the camp. We went, and we spent some time with her. It was enough to inspire us that we knew that we had to do something. And it was always in the back of our head. And we talked about it to other people. My other sister heard about it. She talked to her friends. We went out and other people got involved. We put In His Shoes. We put our organization behind it. Before you knew it, we had teams of people. At our heyday, we had something like 15 people who walked. And these are not big numbers, but when you start putting the numbers, the dollar amounts next to them, you see that over the course of these 10 years, through the efforts of this one person, Anush, over $250,000 has been raised through her contacts, through her people, through people who have helped and gotten on board and done it because she's done it and have introduced it. And that's not counting all the people that we don't know about who have heard about it and said that I want to do it too, right? And so all of a sudden this infectious attitude becomes something that we value, and we say that it's okay. That's the hidden value. It's okay to do it. I want to do it. I have to do it. Because in the end, the purpose for that money, what it serves, is bigger than all the pain, the suffering, and all the headache that I have. And once I can motivate other people, then I'm ensuring that it's going to continue. And there will be opportunities for other people to get involved and more money to come. And eventually all of that goes to fight this ugly disease, right? Isn't that the bottom line? So these were the points that I got out of the Avon walk. It was enlightening because it gave me an opportunity to walk, to share, but to understand an organization that really comes together in a very unique way, that comes together in a very methodical manner with a purpose-driven mission, and they say, this is our mission, this is how we're going to get there, it's a planned activity, we're going to go from A to B, and these are the methods, these are the ways we're going to be arriving to our destination. These are my reflections. These are insights from the Avon Walk. Post-Avon Reflections. And one of the new words that I learned, or new acronyms that I learned, was NED. Happens to be my brother-in-law's name, but it also means No Evaluable Disease. A woman said that she was NED. No Evaluable Disease. And I thought, how appropriate. That isn't that the bottom line, right? If we can all be in a state of NED, that the disease is gone, can you really put a price on that? You can't. So you work for that. I take a break right now. Here's Susie to make her announcements. When I get back, I'm going to give you a real quick little rundown of what's going on in the next few weeks. And then I'm tired. We'll call it a day. Here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you all, first of all, for listening to me tonight. You could probably tell from my voice and the raspiness of it that it's a long time. It's pretty late. So thank you for putting up with us tonight, and thank you for all the wonderful comments, your support in this ministry. Yes, it is a late night. We did our Ascensia feed, and that's part of this bigger mission that we have. It's all part of the In His Shoes ministry, whether it's this podcast, whether it's going out there to do the Avon Walk, whether it's to feed the homeless. It's feeling the pain of others, putting our feet in the shoes of others. This is what it's all about. So we invite you to be a participant in this, and that's what Susie says every week. It's like, you know, become a part of this ministry. It's a living, thriving ministry. Now, with that in mind, let me tell you, we're going to celebrate the 35th anniversary of this ministry, because it's not just the 35th anniversary of my ordination, but through that ordination, it became a ministry of outreach, of progressive ideas, of ideas to really to hurl the Armenian Church into, I want to say 21st century. Let's get it to the 17th first. Let's get it to the 18th first, okay? And actually, it's progressing very nicely. And if you look at where we are today, you understand that God has given us a lot of opportunities as for us to really, I want to say, exploit. How about if I'm a little bit more mild and say, let's take advantage of those opportunities. One of those opportunities, of course, is this ministry. And we're going to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of my ministry, of our ministry, of this ministry. So I invite you to be part of it. Listen, September 24th, we're going to be at the St. James Armenian Church in Los Angeles. Would love to see you there. The Divine Liturgy starts at 10 a.m. And the pastor there, Father Harchin, has been gracious enough to invite me to celebrate there. This is where I was ordained exactly 35 years ago. To the date. And so we invite you. I'm very excited because my ordaining bishop, Archbishop Vacehov Sepian, will be there. Talked to him a few days ago, and he's excited to be there. My sponsor, Father Arshag Khachadurian, will be there. And of course, more importantly, we're going to have just a group of people that are the praying group, the people who really believe that ministry has to begin with prayer and then actualizing that prayer. So I look forward. If you can't get out there, we haven't talked about it. I want to be really honest with you. We haven't talked about streaming it. I've got to set up a small time. Probably won't be until next week. Tonight, it's pretty late, and I know Susie wants to get out of the studio. So we'll talk about it in the next few days and get back to you next week if we are going to be streaming it, if we do have the opportunity to stream and what's involved. So let me call it a day right now. We're all very tired. It's been a long one. It's been a good one. And there's been a lot of tiring from leftover from the Avon. So let's just get some sleep. Hopefully we'll feel better. And that's the kind of advice I could take, okay? So on behalf of the wonderful team who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of VPostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
To ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.